Blog Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Chinchilla Jimmy.
Even in extreme conditions, nobody wants to wear a greasy mosquito spray. Try new Off Deep Woods Dry Repellent. The same proven protection of Off Deep Woods, but with a formula that feels dry, not oily or greasy like ordinary long-lasting repellents. Take comfort to the extreme. New Off Deep Woods Dry keeps bugs off. S.C. Johnson, a family company.
This is Dr. Chinchilla Genesia, the commissioner of WBNN. For those of you that have been having trouble tuning into WBNN's programming due to phone service provider issues with Metro, T-Mobile, or Cricket, I have a solution for you. Go to the Google Play Store or the Apple Play Store, download the TextNow app onto your cell phone, choose a phone number, and then you will be able to tune into all of WBNN's programming. I am the Honorable Dr. Chinchilla J. You are now tuned into News Forum, brought to you by Ngozi Time Multimedia, with host and anchor, investigative reporter, Dr. Chinchilla Jonesia, a.k.a. Chinchilla J, better known as the Queen of Justice.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go!
Wait, I don't think y'all ready for this.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go! Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go! Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go!
Hey everybody, this is your girl, Dr. Chinchilla Jonesia, a.k.a. Chinchilla J, and yes, I am the Queen of Justice. Tonight is Sunday, July 9th, 2023, the second Sunday in the seventh month of the year. Tonight on News Forum, Mass Injustice. We will be having a serious discussion on mass injustices of prosecutorial misconduct, judicial biases, political and police corruption, and racism within our criminal injustice system that leads to mass wrongful convictions. We will also have a discussion tonight on the mass programming, mass mental health crisis, mass bullying, mass poverty, mass inequities, mass disparities, and mass lack of parenting that leads to mass shootings, mass murders, mass black-on-black crime. Tonight, my special guest will be, live from prison, Ali Shabazz, who has been wrongfully behind bars for 23 years, and Deshaun, who has been wrongfully behind bars for 8 years. Also tonight, live from Michigan, community organizer, education and juvenile advocate, and criminal justice activist, Hakeem Nathaniel Crampton, who is no stranger to News Forum. Also tonight, joining me live from Baltimore, Maryland, Kenneth Bond, teacher, mentor, and community leader. a.k.a. The Messenger. Kenneth spent 27 years wrongfully behind bars. And Orlando Jones, also from Baltimore, who spent 37 years wrongfully behind bars. And I also want to hear from you tonight. How can I hear from you? Well, if you tuned in tonight via cell phone or landline, press 1 and you will be placed into the caller's queue. If you're listening tonight via the World Wide Web, you must dial in at 516-453-9133 to talk live on the air with me. And don't forget, if you would like to donate to Be a Voice and Right the Wrong Coalition, please do so. As a matter of fact, do so while we're on air tonight. Okay? How can you donate? Well, it's very easy if you have Cash App. The Cash App is $BAVoiceTour. That's $B as in boy, E as in Edward, A as in apple, B as in Victor, O as in Oscar, I as in ice, C as in Charlie, and E as in Edward. T as in Tom, O as in Oscar, U as in you, and R as in Robert. Be a voice tour. Or you may donate via Venmo. The Venmo account is at Be a Voice. That's at BEAVOICE. And if for some reason you have trouble donating via Cash App, inbox me, Chinchilla Jonesia. Chinchilla is with one L. That is CHINCHILLAJONESIA, my first and last name, with a space in between. Inbox me on Facebook, or you may contact me Monday through Friday at 844-642-8378, extension 888. If you inbox me on Facebook, inbox me your Cash App, your Cash tag, and the amount you would like to donate. You can donate $1, $2, $3, $5, $10, $50, $100, $1,000, $5,000, $10,000, whatever you want to donate to Be a Voice and Right the Wrong Coalition so that we may continue our advocacy work fighting for the wrongfully incarcerated, speaking truth to power, and exposing injustices in America and beyond. And if you have a business, you can become a sponsor of Be a Voice and Right the Wrong Coalition. But for now, don't you dare go nowhere. Keep it right there. News Forum with your girl. We'll be right back after this. Right the Wrong Coalition and Be a Voice would like to thank sponsor Sound Therapy with Magic Man Peru LLC, offering sound therapy as a form to bring the best instead of the beast out of us. Thank you, Magic Man Peru LLC, for your sponsorship of Be a Voice. Find out how you can also be a sponsor by dialing 844-642-8378, extension 111. Help Be a Voice continue their advocacy work to free the wrongfully incarcerated, to end mass incarceration and child life without the possibility of parole. For more information, contact Be a Voice at 844-642-8378, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. until 7 p.m., extension 111. Be a Voice today. Thank you to my millions of listeners worldwide News Forum with their girl Chinchilla J now has over 23 million listeners. News Forum is a syndicated radio program which broadcasts every Sunday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. To tune in and listen to News Forum, you must dial 516-453-9133. And if you would like to talk, comment, or vent, or ask a question to me or one of my guests, just press 1 and you will be placed into the caller's queue. You may also tune into News Forum via the World Wide Web at www.blogtalkradio.com. News Forum with Chinchilla J. News Forum is a product of the ONE Dynasty and Ngozi Time Multimedia. WBNN, we are Beverly Nation. While we believe in freedom of speech and uncensorship, News Forum, however, ask you to please refrain from the use of profanity. And while our views may differ in opinion, we agree to disagree. And all opinions and viewpoints are welcomed and acknowledged. News Forum can also be a very controversial program most times, but it brings truth and exposure of injustices that black and brown people face every single day in this country we call the United States of America, which to me is totally divided, not united at all. And my views are not necessarily the views of WBNN. But again, all views, viewpoints, and opinions are welcome. So, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And again, invite someone to tune in tonight because it may just be what they need to hear.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? Let's go!
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. The host, the anchor, the investigative reporter, none other than the Queen of Justice herself, the Honorable Dr. Chinchilla Jonesia, a.k.a. Chinchilla J. All right, hey everybody, this is your girl Dr. Chinchilla J. And yeah, I'm the Queen of Justice, everybody, and welcome to News Forum for another
All right, Dr. J, you there? Trying to hear you there. Well, of course, as Dr. J gets our electronic technicians together, right here, this is, of course, a product of WBNN. This is News Forum, and the host of this show is Dr. Chinchilla J. Of course, on air now from Lagos, Nigeria, calling at 516-453-9133. Press 1 to join the conversation tonight. Brought to you by Ngozi Time Multimedia. So we're glad for all the hosts that are part of this outstanding nation. And, of course, all of the guests tonight that are going to share their stories right here on News Forum. Of course, tomorrow night we'll be back on here kind of talking about what, you know, Dr. J is talking about tonight with us. And it's so important. Black-on-black crime is in uproar, crime in our community. And we'll be talking about that tomorrow on a special Honey Bee American Songbook right here on this one and only Beverly Nation. So I want to take the time to talk about that as well. And, of course, make sure that our good doctor as electronic technicians together. As she's getting that together, we're going to be playing a track real quick, and let's get it in, y'all. All right.
The Drum Major Instinct.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I for little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their
Yes, indeed. And, of course, thank you, Jackson. And, of course, it's funny. You know, all around the world right now, we're breaking records at this time and moment. And, of course, we can't get our wonderful commissioner on in her line. Everyone else's line is open but hers. But we're going to continue to try to do this right. And we're going to do our wonderful introduction of the young, wonderful young lady, Judge-elect. So proud of her. First time I got a chance to even say that on the air worldwide. Miss Caroline Turner, how are you tonight?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
All right. And guess who we got on our is that, Commissioner? Chinchilla J?
Hello. Hopefully you guys can hear me this time. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Great. All right. Hey, Caroline, how are you?
Hey, I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. Good to have you back. And everybody, welcome to another segment of News Forum. And, you know, tonight is the second Sunday in the month of July. This year is almost gone by. You know, geez, we only have under 5 months left in the year now. And before I forget, everybody, I want to give a big shout-out and a big happy birthday to Muti Ajamu Osaberu, who was just released from prison after a 42-year wrongful conviction on June 23rd of this year. And today, he turned 60 years old, and this is his first birthday. Years on the other side of prison walls. So a big happy birthday to you tonight, Muti. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Muti. Happy birthday to you. Happy big 6-0 to you and many, many more to Muti. All right. So, Caroline, tonight we're going to be talking with several wrongfully incarcerated men and those who were wrongfully incarcerated, and they're out now. And the topic is mass injustice and how all of the things that we talk about so very often, like prosecutorial misconduct, police corruption, and the whole nine, how those things lead to mass wrongful convictions. Because we know that prosecutorial misconduct, it's all across this country. It's very prevalent in these wrongful conviction cases. So I'm calling it mass prosecutorial misconduct, mass police corruption, because it is definitely that. And so we are experiencing mass injustices all across this country. And, you know, it's just crazy. So we're going to be talking about that tonight. And we have Ali Shabazz, who will be on here tonight, who is wrongfully incarcerated in the state of Georgia. And Ali has been on News Forum many, many, many times over the past couple of years. And he's been on the podcast and all of that. And Ali is still fighting. And we're still fighting for him. He needs to be released. He's been in there far too long. And it's just really ridiculous. So we do have Ali and Deshaun. They're calling in live from prison tonight. So we're going to get them on first because they're calling in from prison, okay, live. And so we want to talk to them first and then going to be speaking with Hakeem and with Kenneth and with Orlando. So let's welcome Ali onto the show. Ali, how are you tonight? And welcome back to News Forum. Ali?
All right, Ali, you there? All right. Well, wait for Ali to come on
all
here.
All right.
About
yeah. Let's go with Deshaun. Deshaun, are you on? Deshaun? Okay, we may have to come back to them. They may be doing count or something now, or some, you know, sometimes it happens in the prison, so we know they're behind bars, so they're still on the call. So we will come back to them. And, again, that's Ali and Deshaun. They're both wrongfully incarcerated in the state of Georgia. All right. So at this time, let's go with Hakeem. Hakeem. Hakeem has been a guest on his show in the past, and he is an awesome advocate in Michigan and around the country. And he fights for rights. He fights for educational justice. He fights for criminal justice, and he fights for juveniles, for children. And so how are you tonight, Hakeem, and welcome back to News Forum.
Good evening. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm doing well under the circumstances, and I'm blessed to be here. So thank you once again for having me.
Yes, thank you for coming back on, Hakeem. So tonight we're going to be talking about the mass injustice, all of the things I mentioned that causes mass wrongful convictions across this country. So let's talk about that tonight, Hakeem. In your travels and, you know, and all the people that you're advocating for and things you're fighting against, what to you is the most prevalent thing tonight that causes mass wrongful convictions?
Well, as you know, let's start with the statistics, and we know statistics can be skewed. But let's start with what we have in front of us as our basis so we can delve deeply into, you know, some of those leading causes. Even the Department of Justice has said that between 4 to 6%, which averages out to about 5% of people currently incarcerated, are factually innocent. We have up to about 2 million people incarcerated right now across the United States. And so 5% of 2 million, 400,000, right? So that's a lot of people that could be factually wrongfully incarcerated right now at this precise moment. But if you break those 400,000 down between the 50 states, you're talking approximately 8,000 people in each state could be wrongly incarcerated. Now, that's a crisis. But what is the cause? Mm-hmm. What is leading to that? And we know that historically there's been an overprevalence of police surveillance in our communities. And it's those initial contacts with police that really create the stage for the wrongful incarceration, that the prosecutors then pick up these charges when oftentimes the investigation, the police contact, you know, there's something that has not been handled correctly, trustworthily, so to speak, right? And that begins to trickle into the prosecution. And so prosecutorial misconduct then comes into play as they begin to try to attempt to solidify what the police officer has gathered together of false evidence, essentially. And then that begins goes to the full course of prosecution, leading to the wrongful incarceration.
Yeah, that's so true. And ridiculous, Hakeem, because every day in this country, men and women are still being wrongfully convicted of crimes they did not commit, and it's just so unfair. And these are issues that, it has to be corrected. And the reason it's not right now, why we're still seeing so many, is because these prosecutors are still not being held accountable. A lot of the police officers that are involved with their corrupt behavior and planting of evidence and all the other things they do, coercion of witnesses and false testimonies and false confessions and all of this stuff that is happening, people are not being held accountable. And that's why it's so important that laws are enacted, legislations are changed, and, you know, where it would include prosecuting the prosecutors and even the judges, they need to be held accountable for allowing for being railroaded into a wrongful conviction. And, you know, so kudos for those states that are trying to enact those types of legislations. And in your travels, Hakeem, what have you seen as far as prosecutors being held accountable?
Not much at all. But aside from the prosecutor accountability, there has to be accountability with law enforcement. As you know, the leading cause of wrongful incarceration is false confessions. Who collects those false confessions? Detectives, police officers, right? So that's where it begins at once again. And the second leading cause of wrongful incarceration is eyewitness misidentification. Who, once again, is giving false, misleading information, mugshots to witnesses? Police officers, right? So accountability has to begin with them. The blue shield of protection over law enforcement, which blankets both judges, prosecutors, and law enforcement, right? All of that is wrapped under law enforcement. And they can no longer be just recused from accountability. We have to hold them accountable. And I have not seen many states really pushing for accountability across the nation, and that is a starting point.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Dr. J, are you there? Okay. All right. Well, you know, in your feelings right there, brother, what can be done to make this all better in our communities when it comes down to understanding this information that you're giving?
Yes, yes. Well, there is right now the Department of Justice has created these leading parameters for law enforcement to follow with regard to both confessions and eyewitness identification. And it's a matter of states and communities and counties demanding that their counties, their prosecutor's officers, their police officers actually implement the Department of Justice's own recommendations, right? It is the Department of Justice's recommendations on which will really help reduce and mitigate false confessions and eyewitness misidentification. So if we could really elevate this across the country, elevated to awareness to our communities, they could use this as a tool, as a measure to thereby hold accountable and push for those to actually begin using measures and strategies and tools that actually work in communities to reduce and mitigate these wrongful confessions and wrongful misidentification that lead to wrongful incarcerations.
Outstanding dissertation. Caroline Turner, you have anything to say about this right now, what this outstanding young man is saying?
Well, I'm working on a few post-conviction relief cases at the moment, and as you know, in Philadelphia, there were numerous instances of misconduct in the Philadelphia Police Department, which went on over decades, and it is it's good news that Larry Krasner and his office is making quite a few of these police officers who were responsible for misconduct. It's starting to be that there's some of them are getting indicted and made responsible for their actions. But it's a question of, you know, case by case, unearthing the misconduct through the petitions that have to be made. And some people are out of time. And so, you know, that's always a big problem, is the time bar, as I'm sure you know. So it is a big problem. There aren't enough people being made accountable. It's really hard to prove misconduct from 30 years ago, 40 years ago sometimes. We all know what was going on. But, you know, there has been some progress because we can prove a pattern and practice of misconduct through the indictments that are coming down. And to some other people's cases that have been exonerated. So there is hope, but it's just the tip of the iceberg, I'm afraid.
Mm. And Hakeem, I'm going to ask you a question too. How do these things affect, you know, just the family life in communities where people have been done wrong, unjust at their times?
Well, really it perpetuates the trauma that we've experienced, particularly when you talk about who's predominantly impacted by wrongful incarceration, and it happens to be black and brown individuals in America. And so it perpetuates trauma, it perpetuates the fear, the distrust of systems, which the police, the law enforcement is one of the largest authoritarian systems in the country. And so when that persists, it really breaks down the capacity for us to really be served by law enforcement, right? To who are there to serve and protect our community. So it really breaks down that trust factor in the community and continues to perpetuate the fear and distrust of law enforcement. And I speak this from, you know, from a personal point of view as well, me having been wrongly incarcerated, having spent 15 years in the state of Wisconsin for a wrongful murder conviction from the age of 18 till 33. I'm now 50 years old, so I've been out 17 years, really advocating, using my voice to really push these concerns at a higher level, because we don't realize the magnitude of how many people are wrongly incarcerated. We only look at the twos and the fews, so to speak, which are great numbers of how many people have returned home exonerated. But there are so many more still sitting in prison that haven't been exonerated, that haven't even gotten an attention to their story, to the fact that they are wrongly incarcerated.
All right. I love that. And now, of course, you know, Dr. J, who really is a great architect of what we're doing here, you know, we'll come back on the radio. All right, Dr. J, you're here.
Yes, I am. Yeah. Yes, the enemy does not want me to be talking tonight. But, hey, I am back. You know, it's crazy. But, yeah, you're absolutely right with everything you said. And, you know, this criminal justice system, it has to be changed, and it's going to take a lot of us out here actively fighting to change laws and everything else out here and make sure that we elect officials into office, into these political offices that will fight for the rights of people and that will listen to the needs of their constituents, and that will be fair and just and fight against injustice. But there's so much corruption in the political arena and everywhere else, and people that use their power in the wrong way. And that has to stop. It just has to stop. And right now we have all these people wrongfully behind bars. And another thing, Hakeem, I want to address tonight, a lot of states now are trying to, instead of exonerate men and women that are wrongfully incarcerated, they want to parole them or have them sign a plea. And some states are even asking them to sign a waiver saying that they cannot sue them. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, once again, that's a perpetuation, a way to deny accountability. As you know, I unfortunately have not been technically exonerated. The Wisconsin Innocence Project took my case to the Wisconsin parole chairman, and he was a former Milwaukee police detective and lieutenant from the department that actually wrongfully convicted me. So he got a chance to really look at my case from a double lens, and he did justice in my case by paroling me. And so my situation wasn't a situation of where they came to me and said, we're going to, you know, find an alternate to let you out. I mean, really, it was a push from the legal community to fight for me, to advocate for me to get out, and took it to this man who was bold
calling
enough and courageous enough.
516-453-9133.
Yes, he was bold enough to release me against the wishes of the state, against the wishes of the even governor, who, after he released me, he was forced to resign for releasing myself and two other individuals that was also convicted of homicide conviction. So it's definitely an injustice to attempt to curtail accountability, and what you described is definitely a way to curtail accountability.
Yes, it definitely is. And I've been meeting so many men over the past year with the same thing, that the same thing has happened in your situation, that, you know, they were paroled. And some states allow you to continue to fight for your exoneration when you're paroled, and then some, they don't. And so it's like really crazy. Queens, New York, and Reverend Keith Gadsden, they were both wrongfully incarcerated. And
yeah, her line keeps going in and out there, Hakeem. And trying to get it together. I know she's trying to talk at this time. We can't hear her. But
yeah.
A question for you. According to, like, the segment, you know, the mass programming, you know, the mass mental health crisis that we have right now, mass poverty, mass inequities, mass disparities, and the mass lack of parenting that leads to these mass shootings, mass murders, and, you know, cases of black and black crime, we'll be talking about tomorrow night on, you know, on our show, the Honeybees American Songbook. That's a lot to throw at you, but we'll just go right to the first part, the mass programming, mass mental health crisis that you see in our community. So, you know, how can you talk about that tonight?
Yes, yes. You know, we, you know, this has been a part of this conversation in the long history that we've shared in America and our relationship and our experience with America. And our mental health, the state of our mental health right now is in crisis. And we haven't been forthright and bold in addressing the causes of our mental health and the solutions to our mental health. Right, and so you know we're in a challenging, complex predicament today, and mass incarceration is but one of the various elements and impacts of our mental health crisis in America. And so it's a great segue into your continued conversation about how the mass mental health crisis is affecting us and all the various systemic ways which it has affected us, and which mass incarceration as a continuation of slavery is one of the many tools and strategic, you know, ploys of government in this country to continue to impact us psychologically. And so thank you for asking that question. I think it's an important segue that will allow the doctor to really open up discussion with some of her other guests to bring in their experiences as well. So thank you for that question.
All right, that's awesome, Hakeem, really awesome. And, yeah, mental health issues, it's like really crazy because so many people with mental health problems, they're really being sought out. They're being abused and all types of things are going on with people that are suffering from mental health issues and other disabilities. And people are very biased against them, and it's really sad. And I have some people listening tonight, a family that's listening, who has experienced such as that up in Luzerne County in Pennsylvania. And we're going to be hearing a bit from them a little bit later in the show. We're going to speak with them, and they will be back as featured guests to tell their son's story because it's just so horrible at what happened to him. But let's find out right now if Ali and Deshaun are on now. Ali, Deshaun, are you on the line now?
Hello?
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 Hello? Hi, welcome to News Forum.
Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes. Hey, Ali, how you been?
Hey, man, I'm doing. Hey, Chinchilla, how you doing, sister? I'm doing all right. Praise God. Thank God. You know, maintain.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
No,
all
I
right.
Appreciate you. Appreciate you.
Yeah, appreciate you coming on. It's so good to have you on again, Ali.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I know there's some updates in your case, so please share the updates in your case with us.
Well, since the last time I've been on, my attorney, which I have a great attorney, thank God, by the name of Leah Schroep, out the Sheen, Brandenburg, and Schroep Law Firm in Decatur, Georgia. And my attorney, what she had found in her review of my case, that, you know, the case against me was not strong and there was no physical evidence linking me to the crime. So right now what she's doing, she's, before she goes full-blown to the media and the news people right here in the city of Atlanta and Atlanta and the surrounding counties, that, you know, she's waiting on a guy by the name of Tim Musinetti to send her paperwork that way, as far as the DNA that he has, that he's conducted in the past few months that did not match me at all and shows favorable to me in the light of my exoneration, what she's going to do, she's going to take it to the DA when she has that and go from there without, you know, having to file a civil lawsuit or, you know, things of that nature, and then we have to subpoena, you know, the GBI records or the personnel from the GBI who also from 23 years ago that has the DNA worksheet that also that says it does not match me. So, you know, I'm just maintaining and waiting and praying and keeping my faith, you know. Thank God.
All right. So, you know, I'm so happy for you, Ali, at this time because, you know, you're still serving. It's just something that you didn't do, man. And I know how corrupt the state of Georgia is, and it's crazy. You've been a real true champion on our network for a long period of time. And, you know
yes,
and I love the fact that Dr. J has brought you just on this network to share your story and share your life. Because, you know, your life just as important as mine and anyone, all the people around the world that's listening to you. You know, we had Muti, who just, you know, finally was released.
Thank God for that, man.
42 years innocent.
Thank God for that, man.
It's just crazy, man. And I couldn't even imagine the pain of your family, what they've been going through. But the fact that you've been so strong, as a human being, and you're gonna be out. You're gonna be out of prison. I'm gonna tell you that right now. It's gonna happen. You're going to come home, and it's just like, you know, just in your mind, you know, your hindsight, you know, way of living.
Right.
I tell you, every day that you get up, you know what I mean? You strive for freedom. But every night that when you lay down, I want you to really envision, you know, a good rest, that in your dreams you're free.
Yeah, you know, in my mind, can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Well, you know, in my mind, brother, you know, as a man, you know, for me to stand 23 years, man, and you know, I lost both of my parents in 2021. You know, and my grandmother in 2021, you know, back to back, you know, so, and for me to be able to still, you know, still stand as a man, you know, that's in my DNA. And, you know, a good friend of mine out of North Carolina, she told me that, you know, my parents still alive to me. They never dead.
Right.
They never passed.
That's right.
They still here with me. You know what I'm saying? So at the end of the day, man, I stay focused. I stay reading. I stay studying. I stay working on myself. So when you work on yourself, man, you can always come to terms to stand strong no matter what. As long as you believe in God, have faith, and stay true to who you are. Stay true to who you is as a person, as a man, as a human being, and a believer in the faith in God, man. And you know, I truly, you know, sympathize with other men that's been incarcerated and that's done got out, and I want to know what the steps that they took to while they out there to maintain, because I know, you know, you lose family members, you lose friends that, you know, that probably didn't believe you. But at the end of the day, man, you have to stay focused. You have to stay strong, and you have to know that God, if he delivered you through this, man, he could deliver you through anything as long as you have faith, man. And I just, you know, thank, you know, good friends of mine. I thank, you know, you. I thank Dr. Chinchilla, man, Mr. Caroline Turner, you know, for always, you know, accepting me and being there for me, man, and always giving me an opportunity to speak and speak my mind to the world, man, and all over the world. And that's the greatest feeling that any man that's in my situation that can have, and have a voice and be a voice to the people, man. And you know, I thank God, man. And And for my kids, man, my sons, you know, I thank my sons for always standing tall. You know, remember my son was on the show a while ago, you know, a while back.
Yes.
And, you know, my son, man, yes, my son, my oldest son, man, he's doing good. And he's still, hey, man, both of my kids, man, they doing good, man. And they standing tall, man. And they standing down with their pops, man. And I appreciate that. That's what any man can stand for and ask for in a situation like this. And knowing that God delivered me, because last time we talked, I didn't have an attorney, you know?
Wow. And you know,
God,
it's crazy.
Me.
You know,
yes.
You know, it's crazy. I had to bring this up, man.
Yes.
I know, I skipped my cousin, Barry.
Right.
When my father passed, and it's crazy. Today is the 13th anniversary of my dad's passing. Today, right?
Oh,
and
man.
You know,
yes,
working,
sir. Yes,
doing
sir.
My thing.
God bless.
You know, we keep on moving.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, brother.
Yes,
and,
sir.
And my cousin Barry talked to me about that. About 3 days later, he called me and said, "Hey,
right.
I said I heard you were down." And I said, "Who told you?" My
yeah.
wife. He said, "Yeah, I called you to see what's going on with you." And he said,
yeah.
"Man, your mom and dad, not only did they see themselves again, but they also saw themselves, you know, 18-year-old kids all over again." How about that?
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean? That really
yes,
warmed
sir.
My heart. You know what I mean? Because that's what happens.
Yes.
And there's a question for
yes,
you.
Sir.
Since I got you on the phone, why not ask? Because it's important. mass poverty, mass inequities, and the mass lack of parenting is leading to these mass shootings and mass murders, man. Talk about that right now, brother.
Well, you know, when you don't have the structure of knowing yourself, and when you don't have the mind to think, first of all, and when you put a gun in your hand and you feel power, and a lot of these guys that's in prison, that they don't deserve to be in prison, they just got caught up. So, but when a man has his mind made up, just like the shooting that just happened in Philadelphia, I saw, right? When it was about 3 days ago, during the 4th of July
yes.
weekend, right? So
yes, right.
when I seen that on the world news, man, and I'm like, yo, these kids don't know what they getting into, man. These young boys out here don't know what they getting into, man. You know what I'm saying? Because if they understood where I'm at right now, where my brother Deshaun at right now, with brother Hakeem and brother Mootenham, then that, you know, they will understand that prison is not it. You know why? Because they don't pay you to work. This is mass incarceration. This is
That's
modern
right.
day slavery. I'm in modern day slavery. I work a detail from 4 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon, from 8 to 4,
wow.
basically. But, you know, and I don't get paid. And they don't have no officers working the control stations. They have basically about 7 officers on the shift every single day.
Mm.
And we still get no press, man. And we still get no press. So when you have people that don't have the mind that's outside on the other side of the gate where you're at, people in
right.
prison, you think I'm in prison, but I'm free in prison in my mind. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm free
well,
in my mind.
Right. That's the
but
key, man. It's funny
that
you said that because...
Exactly.
Not to cut you off, but it's funny you said that
yes.
because that's how a lot of the people, man, who are, you know, so-called lifers, and, you know,
yes,
able to survive. And a lot of the guys, man, got a chance to come out of prison. And that's amazing.
Yes,
Dr.
Sir.
J, you there?
I'm here.
All right. Go ahead and continue
yes,
the interview,
sir.
Please.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, that was good stuff, Ali. Now, is Deshaun around? So we can start
yes,
to Deshaun.
Is, yes, he is. Hold on 1 second,
okay.
ma'am. Hello?
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Hi, Deshaun. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great, ma'am. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. All right. So, Deshaun, tell everybody a little bit about your case. So you've been there for 8 years now, wrongfully?
Yes, ma'am. 8 years.
Okay.
My name is Ricky Deshaun Westbrook. I was convicted, tried and convicted in DeKalb County. the same county as Ali. And what happened was on this particular day, July 14, 2015, police law enforcement received an anonymous tip about a black man having tattoos on his face who committed a murder. Okay. At the time, I sold a little drugs or whatever at the abandoned apartment. And so, you know, they gave the police a tip that the shooter was in apartment D, as in dog. And so they went to apartment D. I'm in C, as in cat. And so they went to apartment D, did a knock and talk or whatever. No one answered. And they came next door, and they did a knock, and I answered the door. You know, spoke to the officer, Officer Brown, matter of fact, spoke to him. We spoke briefly. He asked me who lived there. You know, I told him it's not my apartment. I'm just here temporarily. He thanked me. He walked off. All right. From that point on, you know, I have tattoos all over my body, including my face, and I'm a black man. So I walk out of the apartment, you know, minding my own business. I go over to the next breezeway with my homegirl and her son. Now, it's a store located inside the apartment, and she was like, hey, I want to go to the store so I can try to get a job so I can watch my son at the same time, because she's not from here. She's from Florida. She said, can you come with me? I said, sure, let's go. So I take little man, I go to the car, I put him in the car, buckle him up in the car seat, we drive off. Now, the store, like I said, is in the apartment. So we drive a little bit down out the apartment. As soon as we turn, we hear sirens. They pull the car over. They pull guns out. So many officers pulling guns out of the car, they snatch me out the car. Okay. The officers that stopped the car and snatched me out of the car, they never made a report. They never testified or anything. All right. They threatened the driver and told her, hey, if you don't let me search this car, we're going to tow it. And she was like, why are you trying to search my car? I'm like, what did I do? What do we do? And he was just like, listen, I'm not about to keep doing all this with you. Either we're going to search this car now, you can sit, or we're going to take it. So she gave us a tip. Now, at the time that they pulled me out of the car, my cell phone was located in the car. It was on the dashboard. The officer who spoke with me at the door, Officer Brown, he arrested me for criminal trespassing, allegedly. So they take me to an interrogation room. I'm in there for like 9 hours. They grilling me about a murder. I'm like, listen, I don't know nothing about no murder. You know, I help you the best way I could. You know, I waived my right to sleep with them. I ain't got nothing to hide. So they go through my cell phone. They see pictures of me wearing a similar hat and a similar shirt like the shooter. I'm like, okay, I see how you're looking at this. It looks pretty guilty, but that's not me in the camera, because the guy who committed the murder, I'm sorry, they committed the murder inside of a gas station. And so they have surveillance of the shooter and everything. Now, the shooter is a dark-skinned man, a particular height, you know, that's all. And so it's pretty much like a silhouette. So he's like, well, you wore this stuff. This got to be you. You did it. I'm like, nah. I was like, you see all these tattoos on me? They don't even make sense. The dude that's on the camera, he's black. He's really black. I'm not that dark. He's like, well, don't worry. Tell the judge that. Boom. I got charged with murder. Okay, as I'm getting charged with murder, they take me to the Cobb County Jail. I wait, go through the process and everything. We put in a motion saying, hey, this stop was illegal, first of all. You shouldn't even have my cell phone in the first place. The judge, pretty much, Judge Adams, he decided it's a murder case. We don't care about that. It's a traffic stop. I'm not granting it. He let the evidence come into trial. I lose. All right. They come in my trial. They test the clothes that they got out of the apartment, Sam Bamman apartment that we sold drugs out of. They got the clothes in our apartment. They tested the DNA that was located inside the clothing. It came back 5 people's DNA inside the clothing. None of it was mine. They still pressed on with the case. They brought 2 witnesses from the gas station. One who actually saw the shooter, saw a good look. It was his best friend who was killed. He looked around the courtroom. He looked at me for about a couple of minutes. He said, nah, he's not in here. I know the shooter's face. I remember that face. He's not in here. They still kept trying to wait.
Wow.
They brought the other guy in there who made a tentative selection, who said, oh, it could be him. He's the darkest in the lineup. And so the officer was like, oh, well, just put your name by number 3. He put his name by him, so that's why he was at court. So when they asked him, they said, hey, you said you was kind of sure that it was number 3. He said, I never told y'all that it was number 3. I said it could have been him because he was the darkest in the lineup, and all the rest of them wasn't that dark. He said, I told y'all because I have dermals, microdermals, and for people that don't know what they are, I have permanent piercings in my face. They're implanted. So the shooter, didn't have any piercings. And so they was like, well, that doesn't matter. They showed everything out of my cell phone at my trial because there were no witnesses. I got found guilty because of what it looked like I wore that was similar to the shooter. And I went to prison.
Wow.
So
wow,
on my appeal, right, on my appeal, we stressed the same issue, and my appellate counsel, Michael Tarleton, never decided to raise the issue. He decided to raise the unlawful arrest of me, saying that everything after the arrest was through the poison tree. The problem with that is the cell phone was located inside of the car. And when I got arrested, I didn't get arrested with a cell phone on me. So I lost my appeal. Now I'm at the habeas corpus stage where I'm stressing the same thing from the beginning, which is the unlawful stop of the car. The officers that stopped the car never testified. Where are they? They never came to court. There's not even a report of why I was even stopped. And I've been in prison for 8 years over a traffic stop that I've never even got a reason for.
Wow. Let's bring on Caroline, who's a criminal defense attorney. Let's see what she has to say about your case. Caroline, what do you think about all of this? What happened here with Deshaun?
I'm really sorry, Deshaun. It really sounds like the whole way they did this, the identification procedure itself, sounded very suspect. The traffic stop, as you say, they shouldn't have stopped you in the first place. It sounds like so many things went wrong at the actual trial. I'm so sorry. Did your appellate lawyer say that you could go any other route apart from the route you chose?
He never, it seems like he told me, and he said, man, the state has a very weak case built against you, and Little Wayne could have got locked up for this. I asked him, I said, what about the stop? And he's like, he knew that I can go home from the stop, and he didn't want to raise it. And he told me, he said, well, they don't like granted murder cases to traffic stops. That's what he told me. And I'm trying to figure out, what does that have to do with violating my constitutional rights?
They don't like trying murder cases. What did he tell you?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
I didn't hear what you said. He told you they don't like trying murder cases from traffic stops.
Guess what he told me. Yes, ma'am.
Well, they don't like throwing out the traffic stop. That's for sure. They don't like granting any motions to suppress in murder cases. That is for sure. That is 100. They'll look for any reason not to throw a case out because of bad police procedure. That is a fact. That, there was no police report of the traffic stop. There was nothing.
Yeah, when they stopped the car, they never gave the driver. I was the passenger in the car, and
okay. You
know they never gave the driver any type of ticket, no type of citation or nothing. It was just like, you know, they just took my cell phone and that was that. And then the whole thing I was stressing was, where's the justification for this? You know, what was the reason for this? You know, I wasn't even charged with murder till after you decided to go through the cell phone. And then after the evidence came back and was like, oh, well, it can't be tied to him. You know, when I went to my Habe, the lawyer even told the judge, like, you know, he thought we was going to win this case and that the evidence was a little questionable, especially dealing with the DNA. You know, it's 5 people DNA that was located inside the alleged clothes that the shooter wore, and none of it was mine. They found 7 hairs.
Mm. Wow.
And none of them were yours. They found 7 hairs on clothes that were found where?
Inside the apartment that I sold drugs out of.
Oh, I see.
It was an abandoned apartment, so it's like, it'd be like sometimes like 15 to 20 of us in the apartment.
Okay. What was the description of the clothing?
You say what was the description?
Yeah, what did they say the clothing was? Was it like a black hoodie and black pants, which is what everybody wears anyway, or was it something really, really distinctive?
It was like a black shirt. It had some writing on it, like a graphic T-shirt. You had some gray sweats with, like, emoji faces up on them. And you had, like, a black and blue hat.
And could you see those on the video?
Yeah, like, the video clearly shows those type of clothes. Like, it looks like the same clothing, yes.
Okay.
Wow. And I have a question for you, Deshaun. So now those clothes was found in the apartment that you sold drugs out of. And so that was apartment D or C?
Apartment C. C.
Okay.
As in cat.
Okay. And initially they had knocked on apartment D.
Right, because the anonymous caller came to the police like, hey, I know who did this, and he's in apartment D.
Okay. Okay. And so the clothes that they found in apartment C, now, do you know whose clothes they were?
Yes, I do.
Okay. But they weren't your clothes?
Exactly. It was not my clothes. And that's what the whole thing was, is from what I noticed in the interrogation is they knew that I knew who could have possibly done this. But the thing about it is I didn't know anything about what had happened until after I saw pictures and everything, and he showed me everything on the surveillance. And I was like, you know, I'm not about to do your job for you. I'm not a police officer. So I'm like, yo, that's not me. You're trying to make it me, and that's not me. He's like, I'm not even that black. And so my whole thing is, and the argument was, that's not me.
Right. Okay. So, but now the clothes that were on the surveillance camera are similar to the clothes that were in the apartment and look like those clothes.
Right. It looked like.
Yeah. So now, do you know who the shooter was?
Yes, I do.
Okay. But you didn't disclose that to the police.
Exactly.
Okay. Caroline.
Similar to this, actually. I had a case that was very similar to this. It was a case of a man wearing practically the same clothes, not quite the same, because we really dissected it and saw that it was a cone hoodie instead of a flat one, and it was the decals on the sneakers were the other way around and that kind of thing. This is a murder trial I have. We managed to prove a lot of things through the trial, but essentially you have to prove somebody's innocence. It's not enough that you're the beyond a reasonable doubt standard doesn't come into practice in a murder case, because juries want to convict somebody. And the whole thing with clothes that look similar, location that looks similar, that kind of thing, was what I had in this trial, and we had to actually find out who it really was and present to the jury who it really was in order, because in an earlier video, and I could prove that it was that person and not my guy, we actually had to prove that it was the other person. So I know nobody ever wants to snitch, so to speak, but if you'd given your lawyer a clue who it was, they could have worked on that. And, it probably wouldn't be too late for that. It's not snitching. It's just proving that the DNA was from somebody else, and maybe getting your lawyer to do the investigative work. That might be a way to go. That's certainly the way I would tackle this at this point, is trying to actually prove your innocence in that way. Certainly DNA evidence and all of that. If the guy who did it's in a database, then, you know, that could really exonerate you. I think that's your best bet at this point.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, Caroline. I definitely agree with that. because the way they're looking, okay, they have you behind bars, Deshaun, and they want to keep you there because now they have someone they have in prison for a murder. And, yeah, so I would say definitely, you know, take the advice that Caroline just gave you. We'll talk. Say it again, Caroline.
Yeah, I'm not actually, he's not my client, so I'm qualifying it as not being legal advice. This is not an attorney-client relationship, so I can't
realize that. Yes, this is your outlook on, it's just your opinion, your opinion.
My outlook is to find a lawyer who might look into who the real person is without you giving away who that person is. Just like my client did in this particular murder case, and we actually won it. You know, it really does help to have a lawyer doing the investigation into who really did it. So that's not like giving up somebody to the police. That is like pursuing the route with the clue of where that lawyer might find information, put it that way.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Caroline. And Deshaun, we'll talk because I definitely will talk to you again. And it was great hearing you tonight and sharing your story tonight here on News Forum. And Ali, it was great hearing you again tonight. And Ali's case, everybody, is just really ridiculous because that's another case. There's no DNA involved. His DNA is not anywhere. There's no forensics, no evidence, no nothing. But yet, Ali is still behind bars, and it's wrong. It's very, very wrong. So thank you, guys. Live from Georgia, everybody. We're going to bring on my next guest, who is Ken. His name is Kenneth Bond from Baltimore. So we're going live to Baltimore now, everybody. And after we come from Baltimore, we're going to go to Luzerne County, everybody. So live from Baltimore tonight, Kenneth Bond, who is a teacher and a mentor. He does a lot. He was wrongfully incarcerated, everybody, for 27 years. And today is his fifth-month anniversary of being free. So, welcome, Ken. How are you this evening?
I'm pretty good, Dr. Chinchilla. Thank you and your staff for having me.
Yes, yes. Thank you for being a guest. So, now we're talking about this corruption and, you know, mass wrongful convictions and all of that stuff, police corruption, prosecutorial misconduct, and the whole nine. We're not going to talk about your case tonight because you're going to be back on to talk about your story. So tonight with what you heard with the two young men, Ali Shabazz and Deshaun, what do you think about those two cases?
Well, first let me say to Brother Ali that, you know, much honor and respect to him because that's the way forward. When we build ourselves, they'll stop sending us to prison. When we begin to come out of prison, teach us. And when we teach the young people as they come in prison and prepare them to re-enter society to be valuable assets to the community instead of being downfalls or detriments, once we make that happen, then they will stop sending us to prison because it'll be no purpose in sending us there. I think Brother Ali's case is terrible. I think the other brother case is a little more complicated because he probably going to have to put some morals on the table to pursue it. I also want to speak to the Larry Krasner being spoken about, you know, because in Baltimore we had a progressive prosecutor, state's attorney, and, you know, she was for, you know, letting guys who serve long terms in prison out because she understood that those individuals are the ones who are least likely to reoffend and come back to prison. But because of the politics and because of conservative media in Baltimore, St. Clair Broadcasting targeted this sister the same way they target Larry Krasner in Philadelphia, the same way they targeted progressive prosecutors in Memphis and all across this country. We got to understand it as a concerted effort. We ask, what's the way forward? What do we do? First, we got to understand this, is that the system works exactly the way it was meant to work. This country's economy, 33 to 35% of this country's GDP is based off of the underground economy. That's the illegal activities. We know that when we talk in banking, they numbers two, but drugs are criminalizing certain people. They call us number one males. It's no surprise that we go to prison in droves for things we didn't do, because that's how the whole policing thought pattern started. So, you know, they only follow in the culture. Is a book called The Black and the Blue, written by officer, African-American officer, who told from an inside perspective the view of how police view us. Not all police, but we got to understand it is the culture, that it doesn't matter if you committed the crime or not. You are number one male. We get him off the street anyway. It's just about getting one. It's like a sport for them, shooting jumpers, shooting shots, that when they clear cases, homicide, they looked at his heroes. Boy, he a case clear. It doesn't matter how he cleared a case or what means or what unjust methods he used to do it, and no morality comes into play. Because in some of their minds, it's the greater good, and they, you know, utilitarianism or whatever. And we got to understand that, listen, people can't know what about us in that way. So we got to understand it. Until we begin to help ourselves and change things, things won't change.
Wow. Yeah. That's so true. So true. Now, let's talk now about some of these other issues. I want to talk about mental health crises and how people that suffer from mental health issues, how they're often targeted. A lot of them get bullied. A lot of them are looked down upon and all types of things. And even with police officers that don't know how to properly handle a mental health crisis call when they get one. And we've seen time and time again where they have shot and killed people with mental health issues and or either hospitalized them. And there's also people that constantly bully people with mental health issues and other disabilities. And that's something that has to stop. We see people get beat up that have mental health issues, and some to the point of death and paralysis and all types of situations that is happening in the mental health area. And a lot of these people that are committing these crimes, they don't even get punished. They're not held accountable for what they're doing, and a lot of times people don't talk about it. They don't tell who did these crimes, which I think is a very grave injustice. So I want to talk about that a bit. Have you experienced or seen any of these type of situations, Ken?
Oh, yes, ma'am, absolutely. I think there is a couple different issues in what you just spoke about, Dr. Chinchilla. And I'll start with the aspect of preying on the weak or the lack of services that's provided for those individuals. I'll also say that, you know, 40 to 50% of the prison population suffer from extreme mental health issues. I say extreme because I'm going to say 90-something percent of this country suffer from mental health issues. And mental health issues is rising amongst all people. But let's be clear that, you know, Caucasian white people suffer from mental health issues even more than African-American people. It's just a lot of times they provided services, therapists. It's a lack of African-American social workers and therapists to help these type of individuals who have the cultural sensitivity in the cultural background to be able to address those specific needs. But yes, there is a terrible thing anytime individuals prey on those weak in the community. And it is the responsibility of those in the community to protect those individuals, children, women who can't protect themselves in that way, and those people who suffer from those extreme mental illnesses. Yes, it's, I mean, harshness and, you know, that level of brutality. Yes, ma'am, I've seen it, you know, in prison and out, you know. But I also want to talk about, you know, the mental health issue that's based around capitalism and based around possessions and based around our self-identity and self-worth being tied to what kind of car we drive, what kind of clothes we wear, what kind of belt we have or sunglasses we wear. Anytime we base our self-worth off of things outside of ourselves and these material things, then our self-worth and our confidence in who we are and our capability, you know, are affected by the things we have. So we begin to think less of ourselves when we see others have more. We got to look within and seek for that greater. That's the way forward.
All right. All right. I like that, Ken. Okay, so now, Ken, I want you to take a listen. There is a family in Luzerne County in Pennsylvania, a young man named Josh Taylor. He was working at a restaurant called Vesuvio's, and after the restaurant and bar closed, an employee there had punched him in the stomach, and he suffered injuries from that, and he died. Josh has had a disability, and so I'm going to bring his family on so they can talk about it, and I want to get your input on this, and this just sickens me. It really sickens me to no end what happened to this young man, and his family has to suffer like this, and nothing's being done about it at all. The police are not even investigating it. This really, really upsets me. And a dear friend of mine in Luzerne County, Marianne Velez, who just ran for Luzerne County Council and won the primary, she called me and told me about this, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is horrible. Absolutely horrible. So I have his family call in tonight, and they're going to be on next Sunday to tell the full story. But I wanted to give them some space tonight because this is just absolutely sickening and disgusting what happened to Josh Taylor. So I'm going to bring on his aunt right now, Brittany Kinsman. Brittany, how are you this evening, and welcome to News Forum.
Hi, thank you so much for having us on and giving us a chance to talk about Josh and the situation that my family is going through right now. It's just completely devastating and shocking to us that we're still going through this.
Yes.
I mean, it shouldn't be, I guess, because we live in Luzerne County, which is known to be corrupt, but the level of corruption is just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's just really ridiculous. So, Brittany, go ahead. Tell us a little bit about Josh.
Sure. So Josh did have, as you mentioned, he had some intellectual disabilities. So he was just super friendly. He believed everyone was his friend and to fault for him. You know, like he was bullied his whole life, his whole entire life, and he just would kind of rationalize it as they were playing. Like it was all just in good fun. But he was bullied. And the night in question, he was at the bar that he did work at, Vesuvio's, but he was there as a patron. And the bartender that night, we don't know exactly, you know, what came about, but we know that the video surveillance does show that he was punched in the abdomen by the bartender. And they never called 911. They never got him assistance. They never even told my sister-in-law, his mother, that he was punched, knowing very well that he had intellectual disabilities. His killer was one of his bullies his whole life. The cops not only barely did I wouldn't even call it a half investigation. They never questioned the killer. They actually threatened my sister-in-law with harassment because she questioned them on, you know, what was going to be happening with this investigation. When was his killer going to be arrested or even questioned? And the police said to her that they were going to charge her with harassment for saying that it was he was a killer. Stop calling him a killer. Well, what do you call it? I mean, he killed him. So here we are nearly a year later and still no investigation. The Attorney General's Office of the state has now taken over because the District Attorney's Office in Luzerne County said that due to lack of cooperation from the police department, they could not take any action further on his case. So now we're waiting for the Attorney General's Office to hopefully press charges and do a thorough investigation. But his killer has since been promoted at this at Vesuvio's and, you know, lived his life normal, has no remorse at all for the loss that my family suffers.
Wow, that is so sad. And he's been promoted. Oh, my gosh, this is sickening.
Promoted.
This is very, very sickening, absolutely sickening. It doesn't make sense. And, you know, everybody, when you hear this full story, it's just crazy because I often talk about power, people in power, position, prestige, and politics, and how they get away with murder. And this is a prime example. And it's just absolutely horrendous. It's saddening. It's disgusting. How can people just walk over you, okay, and not care? Just step over some lying on the floor. I mean, this is just craziness, absolute craziness. I'm going to bring on now Josh's mom. What's her last four, Brittany? Which one is hers?
The
last four of her is it the 4190?
She is 4222.
Okay, 4222. Okay, thanks. All right, so let's bring on Josh's mom now. How are you this evening, Mrs. Taylor?
I'm happy that you're listening to our story, my son's story, because to this point we can't. Nobody cares. They just don't care around here. We've tried to reach out to press, the newspapers, it's just nobody cares. So this that you're actually letting us tell Josh's story, this means a lot.
Yes, yes. I'm glad to be able to do that because you have suffered, your family have suffered, your son suffered, and, you know, you need closure, you need healing and justice because this is so very wrong. It's so wrong. So how has this affected you and your family?
It's destroyed us. It's shattered us. We're a family of five. We're now a family of four. I can't put into words. My husband's here with me, which is, we're just never going to be the same. We know that, but just, I want to be able to work on grieving, and it's so hard when you're dealing with the justice part because every day, like, you're so mad some days and you're sad and you're just so all over just knowing that this guy is just walking around and I honestly don't even know if he's ever been questioned. And just, it's like my son's life mattered, and like they act like it doesn't, and it just hurts because I just love that kid more than anything.
Yes,
was no
I
empathy.
Know that he did.
Yeah, and his dad. I mean, yeah. We had him young. My husband and I was 18. My husband he's 21. We've been together since 1988. My son still lived at home, even though he was 32 because he was disabled. He still lived at home. He had a very happy life, carefree. I spoiled him. I would still spoil him. And I, like I said, I fought for him for school, for like IEPs. I fought for this kid his whole life. And, you know, once your kid's been bullied, it's just like, I can't, like, I remember I said to the DA, I actually said, I can't believe my son has been bullied his whole life. And then here he is where somebody literally kills my son and they're getting away with it. Like, it makes no sense. It just makes no sense to me. I can't wrap my head around it half the time. Like, I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone. I didn't realize this really happened like this.
Well, my heart really goes out to you and your husband, your other children, and to your whole family. I mean, this is so wrong. And that bartender needs to be behind bars. That restaurant needs to be shut down. The owners, they need to be held accountable as well. Everybody there that night, I mean, heartless mm-hmm. people, heartless people. It's sickening.
Yeah.
It's just,
and the person
so
who did
sad.
This, yeah, the person who did this, it wasn't like they were just coworkers. They went to high school together. Like, so this isn't like he didn't know. You know, sometimes they call it like an invisible disability when someone, you know, has like mild intellectual disability. Like you didn't, like with my son, you wouldn't know. If you saw him, you wouldn't know. But this kid knew. He went to school with him. So he's known him for, you know, 15 years, 20 years. So he knew my son was disabled. You know, they hung around the same friends. So it makes it even more, it makes it more sick that he would hit him like that.
Yes, yes. I thank you so much for sharing what you shared tonight. And you guys will be back on to, so that we can, like, have a show just on Josh.
Yeah.
Wow. And again, my heart goes out to you. You have my sincerest, deepest condolences. I will definitely talk to you all during the course of the week. And I'm going to bring on, I think is it your daughter that's coming on next? We're going to bring on your next family member now to hear from her. All right. Welcome to News Forum. How are you this evening?
Hello. You have both of us. You have his twin sisters, Jackie and Jesse.
Okay. Hi, Jackie and Jesse. Hi.
Hi. Hi there.
Okay. Hi. Tell us about Josh and how you all are feeling with what happened to him.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because we do keep talking about Josh's disabilities, right? And we know he was bullied his whole life, but to say that his soul was not crushed by this, I feel like most people would live a sad life, would be really depressed from the way he was so cruelly treated his whole life. But he truly was the happiest person I've ever met. He loved everyone. And to what Brittany said, he loved everyone to a fault because he even loved his bully who hurt him that night and killed him. But one thing that I really want to make clear here, and it really bothers me, is the victim blaming that obviously is going on with my brother's death. When this is circulating around our area especially, it's constantly questions. People are siding with the perpetrator. They're saying things like, oh, they were just horse playing. People of power have actually compared this punch that killed my brother to birthday punches. They asked, because he had disabilities, why wasn't he chaperoned that night? You know, the stigma that people with disabilities can't lead normal lives. And it's just, it's sickening, because if you hit someone, you know, we're not saying, and the one thing we want to be clear here is, do we think the killer woke up that day saying he want to kill Josh Taylor? No, we do not think that. However, we know, you know, it is confirmed that my brother's death was ruled a homicide due to blunt force trauma. That is confirmed.
By a coroner.
And we know that that punch killed my brother. And we know that actions have consequences. And the fact that people are victim blaming and not holding him accountable is really sickening, because even though if you were driving down the street and you hit someone in your car, of course it was an accident and you're mortified, but people go to jail for manslaughter and you need to be held accountable for his actions, and it is not happening, and it's incredibly frustrating.
And there's been no remorse from the killer?
I mean, none. I mean, the very next day after my brother died, he posted on Snapchat a video of my brother puking. He still bullies him after my brother is dead. He's shown no remorse, and it's just horrific.
Wow. I am so sorry. Yeah. Oh, jeez. Well, I thank you all for sharing that with us tonight. And next week, you will be back on next week, and we're going to talk about this thoroughly next week and talk about Vesuvio's and Jimmy Sabatino, who is the owner of Vesuvio's. We're going to expose all of that next week, everybody.
Yes.
So definitely tune in next week to hear the story of Josh Taylor. And his one-year anniversary of his death will be coming up on August the 26th. And, you know, still nothing has happened to bring justice for Josh in Luzerne County. And justice needs to be served, everybody, and because this is so very wrong, so very wrong. Wow, it doesn't make sense. Not at all. No sense whatsoever. And we're going to talk thoroughly about this next week. Right now, I want to take a couple callers tonight. This is just absolutely outrageous, everybody. It has me in tears because no family should have to suffer this way at all. And nobody should be treated the way that Josh was treated. Nobody should have to suffer that way. And for people to just step over him while he's on the floor hurting, and people step over him and don't care, no one tried to help him up, that's wrong. It is horrific. It's wrong. It's horrendous. It's just, it's incredible that people can be this cruel. And justice has to be served, everybody. They have to be held accountable. So if you have a comment to make tonight, press 1, everybody, okay? Because we're going to close the phone lines to callers speaking on the air at 11:15. So if you want to say something, you better press 1 now, okay? It's just mind-boggling. Caroline, what do you have to say about this case? And we're going to go to Kenton.
I'm so sorry for your loss. It is so tragic. I'm so sorry going to the family. It's absolutely awful. And I can imagine the pain you're going through. And it is so awful that they robbed him of his life in that way. I really hope that...
Yeah.
That there will be consequences for this tragic death of your son. It doesn't sound like you're getting very far with the DA's office or with the police. And I can understand why you feel that his life didn't matter. That's just horrible. And I'm so upset on your behalf.
Yeah, it's just absolutely insane. People were just horrible, absolutely horrible. Does it make sense? Ken, what are your thoughts on what happened with Josh?
Well, I want to echo those same sentiments of the previous speaker and, Hawk and MLK stated, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. So, it's important that, whenever we scream for equal civil or human rights in any type of way that, we be just as generous when we fighting for others who suffer those same type of plights. So, to Josh's family, and I understand loss and having to bury a brother. So, that pain is universal. His story, it also speaks to power and privilege. That when power and privilege speak, it doesn't care who it tramples. That in order for justice to stand, everyone must be equally held accountable for their wrongdoing, no matter what level of the social status that you rest on.
Yes, yes, Wow. Thank you so much, Ken. We're going to go now to New York and speak with Nolan Farrell from New York right now. And then after Nolan, we're going to speak back with Hakeem. Nolan, how are you tonight?
How you doing? I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you.
I love the topic, what you're talking about on the criminal justice system of black and brown peoples being wrongly convicted, or rather, I always said, railroaded. This is a serious problem we have in this country, a systematic problem that we all come together and rally against the criminal justice system all throughout the 50-some states that deal with the wrongful conviction of black men like me, myself. I've been railroaded for a case in New York City for a crime other than I do, and now they're trying to sweep my case under the rug. Now it's playing politics in my situation, and it just prolonged my exoneration. We did rallies,
yeah,
and all they did at the DA office is last night is out the window. Now I take my case to, you know, the organizations, and the organizations seem like they for justice, and it turns out to be a conflict of interest, you know, and the battle is going to continue. But it's just this wrong that it's not taking place in New York City. It's in other states as well. And how can we stop this problem? Well, we could stop the problem. To come together as one and show that we are serious, you know. So this is a very good topic. We have to keep the heat on this topic and fight for justice no matter what.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, definitely, Nolan. Thank you so much for always tuning in. And, yeah, we're going to continue to fight for justice, fight for those who need to be exonerated, who have been paroled, because you deserve to be exonerated because you did not commit a crime and the evidence proves it, and it's just really, really ridiculous. So thank you so much, Nolan, for calling in tonight and for speaking tonight. We're going to speak with Hakeem, bring Hakeem Nathaniel Crampton back on right now. Hakeem, what do you think about everything you heard tonight?
Yes, it's you know, great conversation, great opportunity for us to have this, you know, conversation that we're having tonight. Very important, all these different elements, all these different voices, you know. So I'm definitely glad I had this opportunity to listen in to all this conversation. You know, the brother that's currently incarcerated, one of the things I wanted to address, he had asked a question, you know, for those of us that, like him, had been incarcerated, you know, wrongly and got out, you know, and you know, that transition phase, what was it like to be, you know, to, you know, what steps did we take, you know, that's really transitioned successfully. And I think that for him, you know, what he's doing right now is what people like me really did to maintain success, was to build a foundation while you're inside so that when you come out, you have a foundation to work from, you know, to launch yourself in life. And so he's doing that by continuing to connect to the community and speak and use his voice in situations and opportunities like this.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much, Hakeem. And everybody, before I forget, let me mention the Blitz Tournament, Bia Voice's third annual Day of Freedom. And it's in honor of Vincent Moto, who's Pennsylvania's historical exoneree. And this will mark his 27th year of freedom. However, Pennsylvania still does not have a compensation bill in place, which we're still fighting for. And on July 23rd is Right the Wrong Coalition and Bia Voice's annual Day of Freedom. We will have exonerees out. We will have families of the wrongfully incarcerated out. We will have former child lifers out. And live entertainment, food, beverages, a fishing competition, as well as the chess tournament. And so much more will be going on. And Hakeem is going to be one of the guest speakers. And so will Kenneth Bond. and so many others that will be speaking that day. Mutio Saber will be there. Vincent Moto will be there, of course. Caroline Turner, Cindy Alvarado will be there speaking, and so many other people. And we will have politicians there as well. And we invite you to come out. For more information, call us 844-642-8378, extension 888. Again, that's 844-642-8378, extension 888. And please don't forget to donate to Be a Voice and Right the Wrong Coalition, everybody, so that we can continue to fight against injustices in America, fight for the wrongfully incarcerated as well. Cash App is Be a Voice Tour. That's BEAVOICETOUR. Venmo account is Be a Voice. If you don't have Cash App or Venmo, you can donate via credit card by dialing the number I just gave you. Call that office, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., Monday through Friday. Thank my guests tonight, Hakeem Crampton, Kenneth Bond, Alicia Baz, and Deshaun. And I thank the Taylors for sharing the story of Josh tonight. They will be on next week, next Sunday night, for the full story. And wait till you guys hear all that's involved and who's involved. It's just absolutely insane. But guess what? These are things I always talk about. And you're seeing that, yes, these things do happen. So don't y'all go anywhere. Right now, we're going to have Ngozi time. I will be right back after the track and after Ngozi time, everybody. And again, big shout out to Mutio Saberu, 42 years wrongfully behind bars. Today is his first birthday after 42 years of wrongful incarceration. He turns 60 today. All right, Ngozi time, and I'll be right back.
Well, first of all, there's no time for track. We go right into what we need to do at this time. And I want to tell all the folks out there, outstanding sisters tonight by our wonderful doctor. We had some technical difficulties, and as I'm always ready to do a show and always have my back of all my hosts. So if things happen, I can do your show, and I can do your topic. And so I'm so glad that, you know, me being the first ever host of News Forum way back in 2013, I was able to help out our commissioner tonight. And, of course, congratulations to our wonderful commissioner and Dr. Chinchilla J on her 86th WVNN all-time statue record with the Darlene Lawrence Championship honoring our late, great Hall of Famer and her second consecutive tonight. Outstanding performances. Tomorrow night we come back on this story, Devil Nation, on the show that I moved to do. And it's funny because, you know, I guess doctor and I are knee babies, you know, and I'm so proud. She's already a doctor. I'm soon to be, I'm doctor-elect. And it's funny that we are right there at the hip. Tomorrow night on the wonderful, outstanding platform that is Devil Nation, we're going to present to you Honeybees American Songbook, a special edition. Tomorrow night, with cooperation from the United States Department of Justice, we're going to be doing a show with this theme, Black on Black Crime, the Cause, the Consequences, and the Cures. And, of course, tomorrow night, we have the outstanding privilege of having two young men who are part of the original Beverly Nation in 2013, two charter members. One person is an outstanding person that's been showcased on our BevNat Classics. His name is Louis H. Devon Jr. He'll be on tomorrow night. And, of course, Simeon Myers will be on tomorrow night. Lou Devon was part of First Your Vision. And, of course, Simeon Myers, you know, amazing young man who started his sojourn with us in February of 2013 with his show Make It Plain. And then, of course, we're going to have Jenny 8-Track being a part of that. And then, of course, Huni Bakatun will be part of that show. And I ask all fathers who are part of WBNN to call in and to share their vision tomorrow night. And, of course, what more can I say? Honeybees, American Songbook. And, of course, we'll be, of course, spotlighting the Great O'Neill Twins. 9:30 Eastern, daylight time right here on the one and only Beverly Nation. And WBNN has advertising through Ngozi Time Multimedia. Pinterest, Google, Instagram, and Twitter at Ngozi_time. All I've done in Malay, we're Ngozi at Facebook. Any comments, suggestions, or one for program tonight? Ole day, lay, that Ngozi at my gmail.com. I am Your mother and father's favorite producer, Olivella Malay, when goes, he's saying, and I got luck to all the folks out there at Armed Force Radio that support us in the concert basis tonight. And now back to the 2021 WBNN Linear New Host of the Year, the Sonya Griffin Award winner. And the 2022, most importantly, WBNN Host of the Year, the Anna Waddell Award recipient. Also, in Excelsior, with honor, the fifth reigning commissioner, Dr. Chinchilla Janicia at this time. But I want to say it to all the folks out there, we love you, and nothing you can do about it. Good doctor, take us home.
All right. Thank you so much, Brother L. Thank you, everybody, all of my listeners tonight. Thank you for always tuning in and supporting and continue to always be a voice, everybody. And again, thank you to my guests tonight, Hakeem Crampton, Kenneth Bond, Alicia Bass, and Deshaun, and Brittany and the Taylor family. And please, everybody, please keep them in prayer. Pray for them every day, because what happened to Josh Taylor should not happen to anybody. No one should be victimized that way. No one should be bullied. And it's sad. And for grown men to bully someone, I'm just pissed off, everybody. I'm just upset. And it should not have happened, okay? It should not have happened. And for nothing to be done, it's insanity, people. Everyone should be outraged by what happened. And if you have a child, no matter the age, and if they are suffering with a disability, a hearing impairment, a speech impediment, or whatever it may be, guess what? It may happen to your child. So if you're not outraged and you have someone that suffers from a mental illness or from a disability, you need to be outraged and speak up about this, because justice needs to be served. Those people need to be put behind bars. They need to be held accountable. No one should be above the law. So next week, the Taylor family will be here to share Josh Taylor's story of injustice. Remember, everybody, to always be a voice on purpose. And if you need to reach me during the week, I'm one phone call away, 844-642-8378, extension 888. And shout out again to Muti. Happy 60th birthday, Muti. And yesterday was a wonderful birthday celebration for him yesterday. And a lot of his family and other exonerees, people that were wrongfully incarcerated, and the people from Georgetown, Mark Howard, who's a professor there from the Making an Exoneree program, and also students from Princeton were there as well. And so many wonderful people yesterday, and Kenneth Bond from Baltimore was there as well, and there's so many others, too many people I can't name, but we thank all of you that came out yesterday to support Muti in his 60th birthday. And many, many more to you, Muti. And I want to give a big shout-out to my Uncle Morris, a.k.a. Spade. And he will be celebrating his heavenly birthday on July 13th. So I love you much and miss you, Uncle. And my grandmother just celebrated her heavenly birthday on July 4th. And so anyway, everybody, till next week, I am Dr. Chinchilla Janicia. Keep listening so you can find out how you can be a guest on News Forum and, again, how you can donate. I'm Dr. Chinchilla J. Say, remember to always, always be a voice on purpose. Money talks. So put your money where your mouth is. Be a voice today by donating to Be a Voice. Cash App, $, Be a Voice Tour. That's $ BEAVOICETOUR. Be a Voice Tour, or donate via Venmo at Be a Voice. If you would like to donate via credit card, you must call the Be a Voice office at 844-642-8378, extension 111. Again, 844-642-8378. Extension 111.
Be a voice today. If you would like to be a guest on News Forum and have a case of injustice, please give me a call Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 7 p.m. at 844-642-8378 to tell me about your story. And you might just be News Forum's next special guest.